Good afternoon. This is Kathleen McCoy. I'm your host, and you're listening to Hometown Alaska. And I have to tell you, I'm so excited about this show today. It became my mine to do on Monday, and I'm really thrilled to share with you. We're going to be talking about TEDx. And if you don't know what it is, you're going to know all about it by the end of this hour. And it is, first of all, I want to tell you when it is. And it is March 30th. Which is a Saturday, at the Wilda Marston at the Lusac Library from 2 to 7 in the... Go ahead. 1 to 7. My apologies. 1 to 7 on March 30th. That is when Anchorage's TEDx event happens. We have in the studio with us a few people who are going to launch you into the world of TEDx, and that is Claire Ross is one of the organizers. Hi, Claire.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
And we want to give a shout out to Carolyn Kaneen, who's also an organizer of the local TEDx. Couldn't be here today. She has a 2-year-old and didn't want to bring her 2-year-old into the studio. We also have John Bittner. Hi, John.
Hi, Kathleen.
And John is one of the speakers at this TEDx, and we'll be back to talk to John about what he's going to pitch. And we have Indira Arriaga. Hi, Indira.
Hi, Kathleen. How are you?
And Indira is also one of our speakers, and she's going to tell us a little bit about her TEDx talk. So I really do want listeners to know that this is an idea safe zone we're having here today. And I actually went online and picked up a few quotes about ideas because they're so powerful and so exciting. And I thought it might set the tone just a little bit for us in the studio and even for our listeners. So here's a couple of quotes about ideas. Ideas are like rabbits. You get a couple and learn how to handle them, and pretty soon you have a dozen. That's John Steinbeck. I like that. Ideas won't keep. Something must be done about them. That's Alfred North Whitehead. The way to get good ideas is to get lots of ideas and throw the bad ones away. That was Linus Pauling. And the one that I think is kind of relevant for today is this one. A new idea is delicate. It can be killed by a sneer or a yawn. It can be stabbed to death by a quip and worried to death by a frown on the right man's brow. That's from Ovid, I don't know, an ancient wise person. TEDx is really a place for ideas to come to the surface, and we're going to learn how that happens today. But I also, you know, want to say to our listeners, we'd love to hear from you. You may have a future TEDx idea. The team here is already thinking about what a theme might be for next year. So as you hear this unfold today, you may have some ideas about a theme for next year. You can participate with us today by calling 550-8433. If you're outside Anchorage, 1-888-353-5752. We welcome your email to hometown@alaskapublic.org. I invite you to visit alaskapublic.org. We have links on the website, including to the Facebook for TEDx, Anchorage's local Facebook page. Also a link to all of the speakers at this year's event. And even some like cool, you know, there's the big TED, the national TED, and I threw up a couple YouTube links there. So people, if you really don't know what TED is, you might want to go exploring a little bit and find out. I want to remind you, our show will be rebroadcast tonight at 7, and it's going to be podcast on alaskapublic.org. We're streaming right now on alaskapublic.org. So if people are away from 91.1 FM, they can just turn on their computers. So I wanted to go to Claire and kind of clear up, what is TEDx? And the first question is, who's TED?
As I said earlier, he's a very wise man.
Rich, too.
Rich and rich, yes. Actually, TED is a nonprofit organization dedicated to ideas worth spreading. And TED stands for Technology, Entertainment, and Design. And it's actually 26 years old. It's been around for quite a while. It started in California. And some of the past speakers have been Bill Gates, Jane Goodall, the UK Prime Minister Gordon Brown, Elizabeth Gilbert. So really brilliant people from around the world coming together to share their ideas. And the one key is that it has to be in under 18 minutes. And it also can't promote a certain project or not a group that you're working with. It has to be about the idea itself,
mm-hmm.
and you know, promoting a new idea and a new way of thinking.
Okay. And I know that we're calling the Anchorage one TEDx. So let's explain what that little X is about.
Yeah, there's TEDx Anchorage, and then there's TEDx Istanbul and TEDx Jones Village. They're all over the world. There's thousands of them. And the TED Talk was so popular that they gave smaller communities the opportunity to host their own local version. And we apply for a license to be part of this. It's very well branded. But then after that, we're given freedom to do what's right for our community and pick the theme and the speakers that will resonate with our community.
Well, that's great. And one of the questions I had was, does it cost to go? Does it cost to be a speaker? How does that work?
This is about as low budget of an organization as you can get. Everything's free. It's all run by volunteers. We're not a nonprofit. We're just a group of community members that get together. And we have sponsors who sponsor the individual portions of it, but it's all in-kind, bartering, no cash transactions. So It's free to come.
All right. So that's the groundwork for what TEDx is. And again, I want to remind people it's March 30th. So if you get excited by what you hear today, you haven't missed the boat. You can't talk this year. What would you call it? The slate of speakers has already been selected, but you may be inspired for next year. So at the top of the hour, I let you know we had a couple of guests in the studio. We're expecting a few call-in guests, and we actually have one of them on the line. Hello, Nick Mink. How are you?
Yeah, hi, Kathleen. How are you doing?
Great. Now, Nick is another one of the local TEDx speakers, and I invited some speakers to just call up and give a little pitch about what they're going to be talking about on March 30th. And Nick is an expert in sustainable food systems and designing sustainable food systems. Nick, I know you sort of break your life up between Sitka, when you can get there, Sitka, Alaska, and Indiana, where you're at Butler University as a sustainable food fellow, something very academic like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very academic. Basically, kind of what I do at Butler and what I do at Sitka is look at ways to repurpose food systems and build new paths for foods to follow from producer to consumer that, I feel in my own mind and through a variety of metrics are more sustainable, better for producers, more healthy for consumers, more socially just, and of course, better for the environment, which is one of the keystones of sustainability.
Now, when you and I were chatting the other day, my big question was, how did it get so big? How did the industrialized food chain become so big and something that we're, at least some people are trying to wrestle to the ground and get closer? So you had some interesting perspectives. Love to hear them.
Yeah, I mean, most people would say that it goes back to World War II, and the real need for our government and our industry to supply our troops and our civilians with an adequate food supply, and especially in the context of coming out of the Great Depression, right, where we have so many people who are hungry. We have so many people that are not adequately fed, or what we call today, have poor food access or be poor food insecure. And the system that was really catalyzed and set up during World War II, it was one that sought to provide consumers and producers the necessary tools they needed, both to make a lot of food and to eat a lot of food. And in that, the industrial food system has been immensely successful, but of course now we're sort of dealing with a lot of the consequences of that World War II post-war industrial food mentality, and we've seen a lot of the negative side effects of setting up this incredibly efficient, profit-driven, surplus-driven food system.
One of the things that we chatted about the other day was you see here in Anchorage definitely the rise of the farmers market and the Know Your Grower movement and Alaska Grown and all that. But we also still see, supermarket shelves filled with 35 varieties of potato chips and, just an amazing variety. And I'm just wondering, is the one having an impact on the other?
Well, I mean, of course, that's really complicated. And that's something that people who are interested in reforming and shaping and remaking food systems are really grappling with because, unfortunately, even as there's been this tremendous explosion of farmers markets and direct-to-consumer pathways for food to travel, right, which is, you know, your community-supported agriculture, your community-supported fisheries. Even as that has developed, you know, it seems as though the industrial food system has also gotten stronger and better developed. And I think one of the great challenges moving forward in the next 10 years is, you know, how do we minimize the gap that's grown between those who have access to sort of healthier local foods and those who are more wed through no fault of their own, oftentimes, to a lifestyle and to to the choices that are tied to an industrial food system.
And I do want to sort of bring you to your topic, which is, of course, sustainable food. It's titled From Commodity to Community. And, you know, one of the things I think about here is marketing. Maybe we'll see a huge shift in marketing because we've put a lot of energy into marketing. Certain companies have put a lot of energy into marketing. Maybe as the community and the audience awareness changes, the marketing will change too. And we might be seeing marketing that's actually maybe guiding us towards healthier food. So do you think that'll be part of this revolution if we get one?
Yeah, I mean, it's a complicated thing because on the one hand, you know, of course, a lot of people and a lot of food activists are very suspicious with the co-opting, right, of the food movement and the sustainable foods movement by big business and industry and what that would mean for the future. But, you know, one of the things that I am going to talk about in my talk is that I'm convinced when you look at history and when you look at where we are right now, that the development of and the embrace of community-based cooperative food systems are where I think one of the most important answers lie in our current kind of food conundrum. And looking back at history and seeing all these incredible food movements going back to, of course, the Grangers. And, you know, the New Deal, the Matanuska Valley in Alaska, and all the way taking that forward to the cooperative movement of the 1970s and the community-supported agriculture and community-supported fishery movement of the present day. I think herein lies this magical power of community and associational food systems that I think to me is where the power of localism in our food system actually lies, which is in food systems that do right for communities and make people belong to them, both producers and consumers.
Mm-hmm. So hence the community out of that talk. So, mm-hmm. So Nick, that's what people are going to hear information about this at the TED Talk that you give on March 30th.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll talk. And I think one of the idea, of course, in the TED fashion that I want to explore is how do we deliberately create food systems that inculcate and really reinforce belonging among people and what that might mean. And I think that's really the kind of the meditation that I'm going to explore for my 18 minutes next week.
All right. Well, I want to thank you, Nick, for calling in. And I would like a cheer from the studio audience here. Thank you for calling in from Indiana. And safe journey to Alaska for the talk on March 30th. And if your appetite is wet a little bit for Nick's approach here, you can hear his talk in person. So you haven't missed out. So thanks so much, Nick, for calling from Indiana.
All right. Thanks, Kathleen.
Take care. Bye-bye. Wow, that's great. I know so many people are, that's a great topic to have, I think. I think, Claire, you told me that your sort of talks were kind of around food, I think maybe art, and maybe technology.
We've broken them into three themes. The first one is community through food and culture. The second is Community Voices, and the third is Collaboration and Community, the New Frontiers.
Mm-hmm. Actually, there's an overall theme for the year, for this year, right?
Yeah, the overarching theme is our collective strength, connectivity, collaboration, and creativity.
That's a pretty big umbrella. Just about anything could get in
exactly.
under there. So I want to just remind our listeners, if you've got questions about TEDx in Anchorage or, you know, just what you hear on the program today, give us a call at 550-8433 or send us an email to hometownalaskapublic.org. You know, maybe you've got a TED idea or you want to just try it out a little bit and see what these very supportive TEDx people would say about it or you know, just encourage you. So give us a call. But now we want to spread out in the studio and really go to some of the other TEDx speakers we have in the studio. Who wants to go first?
Sure, I'll do it.
John Vintner is going to jump in and tell us a little bit about his TED Talk. John is with the Anchorage Economic Development Corporation. He is the Business and Economic Development Director.
They promoted me. I'm actually vice president now.
Oh, my gosh.
Woohoo.
Oh, my gosh. Wow. I hope that came with a big paycheck.
You know, never as big as you'd like.
Yeah,
right?
Never as big.
I'm still amazed they pay me at all.
Oh, you must like your work then.
That's
a good sign. You're talking about crowdfunding in the broadest sense, right? So, are we talking Kickstarter? Are we talking, you know, what are we talking?
We're talking a lot of different things. And I got really excited when I heard what the topic for the TEDx Anchorage event was going to be, because I think this is especially topical for Alaska right now. We're seeing a drawback in federal funding. We're seeing a drawback in state funding. Nonprofits are having difficulties with their budgets. And there's never been a more important time for individual Alaskans to get involved in what's important to them, be that business, be that art, be that nonprofits, or, you know, trying to develop a sustainable food system here. I mean, mm-hmm. a lot of people are working on a lot of different things, but what they don't have is sort of a way to focus the energy and really get attention to what they're doing. And so crowdfunding is this amazing system. It was kind of developed back in 2008, 2009, when the bottom fell out of the market. The first thing to go on a global and national level was art funding. And so this allowed people to, you know, instead of a CD, you know, a music group saying, well, we need, you know, $10,000 to release our new CD and going to get a grant or a music studio, they go to their friends and fans and say, look, you know, we know you like our music. We think we have a really good product. If everybody chips in $10 to $15, we can get this CD, you know, out the door, and everybody gets the music and you get to be a part of the process. And it was wildly successful. It was it wasn't just the fact that you were getting a physical object. It people got really engaged in what they were investing in, or not investing, but what they were giving money, contributing to.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, it was almost like your own private little reality TV show. You got to see the trials and tribulations of bringing a CD to market. You know, the drummer, mm-hmm. you know, got eloped with somebody and now we've got to find a new, you know, whatever it was. But it was this great thing. And so when the CD arrives at your doorstep, it's got a backstory. It's not a commercial product. It's something that you've participated in getting out there. And so later on, you know, as the economy sort of continued in that route, business financing started to suffer, especially in the more, not fringe, but, you know, cutting-edge areas, high-tech manufacturing, game development, programming software, and things like that. And the smarter members of that group realized Kickstarter and Indiegogo and crowdfunding could work just as well for a business as it could for art. I mean, it's all sort of the same
concept.
So
art came first, but then
art came first.
Art led the way.
It did. And it's actually still the bulk of crowdfunding out there, at least through Kickstarter, is for art projects. Yeah. And that's especially true in Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of the funding here has been for theater and music and film.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a perfect tie-in for us. I mean, especially when you consider, you know, how rural most of our state is, it's difficult for, if you have a great idea out in Anaktuvuk Pass or, you know, even, mm-hmm. you know, Barrow or Nome, unless it's, you know, under a certain size, it's very difficult to get the financing you need and get the attention you need to really get that idea off the ground. But through platforms like Kickstarter and Indiegogo and things like that, you can access an entire world of people who are willing to invest in a really interesting project, not because they want to make money off it or something like that, but because they believe in what you're doing and they want to be a part of it.
Mm-hmm.
To date, the highest funded Kickstarter project in the state of Alaska is out of Barrow. You would anticipate it was Anchorage, right? But
yes.
It's not. It was $86,000 for the indie film On the Ice.
Wow.
And the second highest is Marion Calls. She did a Kickstarter thing for her European tour. Mm-hmm. And it's, I mean, so the and these are two, you know, between the two of them, that's almost $150,000 worth of Kickstarter funding.
So are you giving us a primer on crowdfunding? Is that kind of what your talk is in a way?
I'm going to give a you know, sort of a backstory of crowdfunding. I'm going to give you a broad overview of sort of what goes into a crowdfunding project, you know, what it means in the broader sense. But I want to make it specific to Alaska. It's the bulk of it is going to be where Alaska is now, where we've come from, and why this is important going forward for the future, not just for art projects, but specifically for business development and developing new industries to sort of supplant the funding that we're losing.
We're going to lose.
On other sides. Alaskans, it's all about us taking responsibility for our own future on an individual level. And mm-hmm. I think that you won't find a more innovative or engaged or intelligent community outside of Alaska. And we also happen to have a really interesting level of disposable income. I mean, mm-hmm. not just in the fact that we, you know, get, you know, we have higher wage rates than most of the nation, but every year, you know, the PFD hits the economy. If people gave $10 of their PFD towards a you know, crowdfunding projects, it would be the largest investment fund in the world.
Wow. You know, I don't mean to be philosophical about this, but it does feel as if we're in a giant reset. Like the institutions that were the responsible institutions, and whether that's, you know, the media, the legacy newspapers, the, you know, they're still with us, but things are changing because the tools are available to so many more people. And we used to think you had to go to a bank to get a loan, or you had to go to a record company to get somebody to pay it. You know, it's just kind of crumbled in a way. And that's an exciting thing. It's also a little scary, you know. I mean, there were probably some accountability things built into some of those institutions.
There was, and there is some concern out there about, you know, fraudulent crowdfunding and things like that. But really, what I think the power of this is what we've found, and what, you know, people who watch these type of trends have found, is that groups of people are phenomenal predictors of what works. They are exceptionally astute at picking out things that are fake or scams. I mean, mm-hmm. you think of all the different internet scams out there. We've basically built an entire global culture that, you know, spends half of its time trying to decide whether or not X or Y is, you know, full of baloney, or there, you know, is that Nigerian prince really going to give me $10 million if I send him my bank account? And it's been proven over time that if you bring the internet to bear, they have experts in everything. It's amazing. There are people mm-hmm. out there who are experts in left-handed hamster grooming. I mean, they have spent their lives really getting to know that subject. And so when you have access to that kind of breadth of knowledge, it's amazing what you can accomplish. And we're moving away from the model where one person gets to decide, all right, this is the music that we're going to go with from now on. This is what the market wants. And, you know, everything else is just sort of falling by the wayside. Now, get rid of the middleman. We're just going to ask the people that are buying the music, what do you want? What are you interested in? Right. You tell us, and we'll give you exactly the product you need to the scale that you can handle.
Now, is the Chris Anderson that wrote The Long Tail, which is, this is mm-hmm. what is reminding me, is that the same Chris Anderson that did TEDx? Don't know. We don't know.
Probably. I would be surprised if it wasn't. Yeah. He's done a lot of really interesting stuff.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, that's exciting. So your talk, do you have a title for your talk, or is it just sort of
crowdfunding? I do. Crowdfunding Alaska's Future, I think, is what I submitted. But Claire could slap me and tell me I did something else.
That's what I have, but we'll see what it turns out to be on Saturday.
With all the excitement of really delivering it. So great. And we'll come back and talk a little bit about that. But let's bring Indira on. Hi, Indira.
Hi, Kathleen.
Now we're leaving sort of crowdfunding was about arts and business, but we're going really to kind of a sense of community with you, Indira. Let's talk about what you're going to talk about on March 30th.
Yes, thank you. The title of my topic is Choosing a Multicultural World, as if it's a choice. And my idea basically came about from one of the projects that I've been doing in Anchorage over the last 9 years, which is Dia de Muertos, Day of the Dead. And this year we had over 400 people, about 20 altars, quite a diversity of people attending and participating. And that,
for those who aren't sure what Day of the Dead is, just tell us.
Sure. Day of the Dead is an event that happens every year. It's based in the Mexican culture and philosophy about dying. That, you know, we believe that once a year our ancestors come back and visit with us. And so we prepare for that, and we have altars, and we make their foods, and we basically prepare for a day where we commune with the past, with our history, with our loved ones who have passed. you know, and we have a great time doing it. And it's a way of keeping present, you know, the inevitable, which is we're all going to die, and learning to deal with it. It helps new generations be introduced to it. Children, you know, begin to learn about it. It doesn't mean that at the end of your life you won't be scared of dying, because I think we all are. But it means that you have some points of references in which you understand that it's a part of life, and it gives you some tools to basically process through that. Mm-hmm. And so when we started Day of the Dead in Anchorage, we started with one altar out in the Sunshine Mall. And it quickly grew. I mean, I didn't know that there was going to be such an interest and that people were really open to it. And I don't mean just people from my own community, you know, the Mexican community, but people from all across Alaska and all across cultures. And it's a wonderful thing. And so every year we try to include different cultures and other people into our own celebration of it, because we're all part of this process of living and dying. This year, however, we received a letter, it was anonymous, that was critical of the event, but also offered some really good criticism in terms of ways that we can improve it. So we're very, very grateful, because I think it'll be a better event next year, you know. But unfortunately, because it was anonymous, we had no way of reaching out and responding to some of the criticisms. In looking at some of the criticisms, it dawned on me that they weren't really about the event itself in terms of logistics, but that they had a deeper rooted meaning somewhere else in the development of culture. And in exploring this idea, it's been really challenging to narrow it down, because, you know, culturalism, culture, multiculture, whatever you want to call it, is huge, and you can spend your whole lifetime doing it. And so what it came down to is looking at it, saying, okay, where are we now in our own history, in our own community, and realizing that, you know, we are more interconnected than ever, you know, as a world, you know, with technology, with education, with accessibility, you know, with migration, with just all kinds of population trends and demographic trends that are quickly changing. And so what do we do as individuals to navigate through this world? And so my belief is that you have a choice as an individual to understand your own culture and to understand the impact of other cultures onto you as an individual and subsequently onto your culture. And so my talk really looks at, you know, multiculturalism simply as what the word means, you know, many cultures that coexist in closer and closer spaces, and looking at how do we as individuals make the choice to embrace that. I mean, it's happening whether or not we like it. So you have a choice, you know, you either fight it or you don't. But I think inherently you have to understand it. And of course, I don't go into everything that has to do with the topic, because that would be impossible.
You only have 18 minutes.
I only have 18 minutes. And, you know, and really. But I do focus on two particular characteristics that I think impact how we make those individual choices. You know, one of them being fear, and the other one basically revolving around the idea of pride, you know, in our own cultures and in the cultures around us. So, yeah, I hope people come and join us.
Big topic.
Big topic.
I didn't really do a good job of letting everybody know who you are. Indra Arriaga, an artist, but also you have a political science background.
I do. I have a master's in political science, and I work as a research consultant.
Go ahead.
For Information Insights in town, yeah.
And you were born in Mexico.
I was born in Mexico.
And how long have you been in Anchorage?
9 years. Mm-hmm. I did the trajectory, you know, Mexico, Texas, California. I just keep going north. I think I'm going to go all the way around.
Yeah.
You eased into the weather, though. Yes, I like that. Yes. That's a smart way to do it.
Thank you.
That's great. That's great. Yeah. So that's really amazing. I mean, we have really the gamut. This first half hour gives you a feel for the breadth of topics that might come up in the TEDx talk on March 30th. If you just joined us, we're going to take a little break, but I want you to come back. We're talking about TEDx Anchorage. This is the fourth time Anchorage has hosted a TEDx, and it is 12 speakers giving wildly different ideas, presenting them to an audience. We'll be back in the second hour or second half hour, and we'll hear from a few more speakers and talk some more about TEDx. This is Kathleen McCoy. You're listening to Hometown Alaska. Mm-hmm.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska on KSKA Anchorage. If you missed part of today's program or would like to listen again to Hometown Alaska, the program repeats tonight at 7 on FM 91.1. Remember, tonight's rebroadcast is recorded and will not be taking phone calls. You can subscribe to free podcasts of Hometown Alaska on our website at alaskapublic.org. This is KSKA Anchorage.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. Our topic today is TEDx Anchorage, and it's occurring on March 30th, 10 days from today. The speakers are already selected, but the audience, we need the audience, right, to come and hear these ideas. The time for this program is 1 to 7 at the Wilda Marston at the LUSAC Library. And in the studio with me today, we have two of the speakers who are going to give presentations, and we have one of the organizers. So welcome back, Indira. Indra. There I did. I knew.
Now you're on the list.
I was just waiting to say that wrong. My apologies, Indra. Claire, an organizer, along with Carolyn Cadeen, who isn't with us today. And then John Bittner from the AEDC, who was talking to us earlier about crowdfunding. So we heard sort of a pitch from about crowdfunding and sort of a new way of raising money for ideas that you want to support. And then we also heard from Indra, sort of this call for openness to multiculturalism. So I'm going to welcome Brendan Babb to the show. He is another speaker March 30th. Hi, Brendan. Welcome to Hometown Alaska.
Hi. Thanks for having me on the show.
Thanks so much for calling. So we're sitting here in the studio with John Bittner and Indra and Claire, and happy to welcome you to Hometown Alaska and just hear a little bit about what you are going to be talking about. Let me tell the audience that I know you're a computer scientist, at least in part of your life, and you are working on these amazing algorithms that evolve as you work on them, and you're working on, UAA NASA images coming back from the Mars rover. I mean, some stuff that people probably don't imagine is happening in Anchorage. But what is it that you want to talk about at the TEDx Anchorage?
Well, I'm interested in talking about crowdsourcing and civic hacking. As John mentioned, there's a ton of really talented and creative people in Alaska, and there's a lot of potential for people to contribute to different projects, both locally in the community and also on large-scale problems. And crowdsourcing, I would say, half the time is about using the power of the crowd and distributing a problem across a ton of people. And then the other half is about having a really challenging problem and finding that one unique person in the crowd that has a special solution for it, and trying to match the problem up with that person. And the internet and open source really allows that to happen a lot more easily than maybe when we're writing in stage directories and stuff like that.
So it can be both targeted to the one lucky individual that needed this message that has the answer, but also a variety of people mulling over the problem and offering a variety of different answers. Is that right?
Yeah, providing either a bunch of different inputs or seeing flaws that other people can't see. Mm-hmm. A lot of it's about bringing fresh eyes to a problem, or bringing someone who doesn't know the way something's always been done. Like, why would you suggest that we always do it this way? And someone can come in and say, ask questions that people have just taken for granted and haven't reexamined, and sometimes can make a breakthrough. One example I'll be talking about is trying to figure out possible cures for AIDS, and folding of proteins is a really complex problem. So a group of people put it as a video game called Fold It.
Say that again, Brendan. Say it again. The name of the game.
It's a video game on the internet called Fold It.
Oh, like Fold It? Like,
yeah.
So just like fold a piece of paper, fold it. Okay, great.
Yeah, so folding proteins together. And the scientists had run into a block, and they just couldn't figure out how to move forward. So they thought, oh, well, we'll just try this and see if the video gamers, after a year, might come up with something. And within 10 days, they had come up with a possible solution. And actually, when they went to publish the paper, they listed 50,000 co-authors on the paper.
Wow.
That's kind of the power of the cloud. And then also, there's websites like Innocentive that basically businesses just come with problems that they can't find a problem for and put it out there, and there's like a cash prize for solving it. And people who might have a job that's completely different, you know, come home and take care of their kids and then spend a little time trying to solve a problem and might be able to have an insight.
Hmm.
And then the other thing is civic hacking, which thanks to John and AEDC, they posted a hackathon last June.
Hackathon, hackathon. Wait, yeah. Stop there. Help me with hackathon. I imagine computers are involved. It sounds like breaking into computers.
Yeah. So actually, when the hacking first started out, the term was a term of endearment about people elegantly mastering code or writing code that was almost like poetry. And then kind of through the decades, it got turned into people hacking into bank sites and stuff. And now it's starting to come back into basically people that can find different uses for a given code or hacking different ideas, basically coming up with really good solutions to existing
kind of workarounds. I found the term life hack. I think there's a website out there, and it's like all these people who figured out how to do something a little easier. And it's who wouldn't want that? Yeah.
I'm a big fan of cheating off other people. Like, if they come up with a good solution, then, I don't need to reinvent the wheel on everything. So
Yeah. Have you used crowdsourcing in your own life?
Well, when trying to run a video or deciding where to go eat for dinner.
So little decisions can be crowdsourced. Right.
I've used it some in terms of like forums and some research forums where I have a challenge and ask people what they think and get different opinions. So, I mean, that's a low form of crowdsourcing. But the hackathon, there was one in June last year, and we were working with Civic Data, and Lance Ahern, who's the CIO at the municipality, has been really supportive and provided us with data. And one project, it's not complete yet, was putting the bus data. The Muni is a city pretty advanced in terms of having real-time bus data, and we're going to try to move it to make it more accessible for smartphones and also for doing routing, saying if you're at a movie theater and you need to go to a grocery store, you know, what two buses would I need to take and when they would come. And then recently, Becky Boone led a team for Code for America. This basically, it's kind of like a Peace Corps for programmers. And the idea was to take some programs and implement them in Anchorage. And we worked on Adopt a Hydrant, which basically is an application that shows you a map where you live of where fire hydrants are close by, and you just commit to taking care of a fire hydrant for the winter and just keeping it clear of snow.
Does that mean you have to like put a blanket around it, or what? Keep the snow away?
Kind of like shovel it out. Like when you go to shovel your driveway, you might just go, "Oh, I'm going to go." You can name the hydrant. You can go over to your hydrant and keep it clear of ice and snow, and that can make a
serious problem for the city? Like, I mean, was there a call for some solution there?
No, actually, we worked with Alaska Wastewater and Waste Utility, and they've been great, and they already do a great job of taking care of that. This was just a way to help people that are already close to the fire hydrant take care of that, and that frees up a little time for AWWU.
Mm-hmm.
Also, it was one of the programs that Code for America already had. They had a set of four programs, and so it was a challenge for cities to choose one of the four and get it up in like a month. And we were able to do that. And when luckily the Daily News was nice enough to write a story about us, and we had 143 people adopt a hydrant as soon as we launched, and we ended up winning a grand prize, a national grand prize.
Oh my gosh, that's great!
It was great, and it was really the work of Becky Boone and some people at Resource Data and Lance Ahern and some other people. I just posted a lot of stuff on Facebook.
Right, right. So again, it's kind of a different way of getting at solutions. And, you know, are there any typical questions people, when you start proselytizing about crowdsourcing, do you get questions that are, you know, the first blush reaction to this? I mean, are people doubtful of it? Are they, how do they react to it?
I think people were a little doubtful at first, but now it's starting to creep into other things. The biggest challenge I've had in the researching for the talk is just exactly defining it, because it's kind of blurred into other areas. But I think people are familiar with, like, American Idol, which I wouldn't call traditional crowdsourcing, but, you know, if someone is about to get off the show and they can, you know, get a large number of people to call in, I mean, that's kind of the crowd affecting who gets to stay on the show. It's more like voting, but there's a lot of stuff that we do informally of crowdsourcing, of where we ask, well, we're going to make a decision, we want to find a new doctor, and we ask a lot of people who they suggest. And so we're not, you know, going and asking a doctor in particular to say who is the best doctor. We're gathering different opinions from a group. And then if we hear the same name a couple times, we're like, I think that person is who I'll go with.
Yeah. It sort of elevates the consumer to being something of an expert in different areas. Instead of going to an expert, you sort of go to the consumer and say, well, what was your experience like? Who do you recommend? Which is kind of very democratic. It's kind of refreshing. Yeah.
And another thing I like about it is that a lot of the times I was reading about a survey where they asked people who had solved a lot of problems, you know, or were involved in crowdsourcing things, you know, what motivated them. And often it wasn't, you know, the money. The money was nice, but a lot of it was just, you know, solving a problem in something that they were an expert in or just had a great idea for. Kind of that people like, you know, challenges. I think people by nature like to solve puzzles, and if they can do that and get recognition for it and have a sense of accomplishment, I think mm-hmm. that's a motivating factor.
So your talk is going to sort of kind of give people a little bit of the history of it. It sounds like you're going to be an advocate for crowdsourcing, which is not a business. It's just an idea. So it's legal, right?
Yeah.
I think that's a great roundup, Brandon, to give us a feel for what people might hear if they come to your talk. Is there anything else you want to add?
It hopes to be an overview of crowdsourcing and civic hacking. But then also, I really want to give people an opportunity, if they're interested, to take action, to get involved and stuff. There's something that I'm working with John and other people on, and Jeffrey Wright from Pango Media. There's going to be an Alaska hackathon for nonprofits, April 20th and 21st. And so there's a lot of different communities. There's a maker community that's hoping to have a maker fair at the library in July of 2013. And there's lots of different groups that are doing really cool stuff. And so I think there's a lot of opportunities. And then there's also just a lot of medical crowdsourcing things where people can just contribute to data that can help, you know, possibly get better cures or better treatments for diseases and really help science move forward.
Wow, it's really makes you think about Anchorage completely differently when these new ideas kind of flow in here and get Alaskanized by the people here. It you know, you could live in Anchorage and not know that there were hackathons or not realize that movement that you might think is outside is actually here already, or, you know, that we've got crowdsourcing already underway here. So it's kind of makes it exciting to be in Anchorage and not feel as if everything comes here 10 years later or whatever, you know. So so Brandon, thank you. Go ahead. What else are we going to add?
Just one last thing I would say. AEDC has really been helpful and really supportive in helping the hackathon. And if you want to find some links I mentioned, just blog.brendanbab.com. I just threw some up there. I'm not selling anything. I just
it's just about the ideas.
Selling an idea.
The power of ideas. All right. So give that address again.
Blog.brendanbab.com, brendanbabb.com. And I just put some links that mentioned some of the events and some of the things I mentioned.
So, I mean, you're just sort of crowdsourcing our show for us here. That's just Thank you. All right, Brendan, thank you so much. I really appreciate your calling in.
Oh, thank you very much.
Take care. Wow. So if people are just joining us late, they have missed an amazing show so far. we're talking about TEDx Anchorage, the fourth time Anchorage has hosted a TEDx, which is kind of it's ideas worth sharing, I think, is kind of a slogan for TED. There's a national group, and this is a local spinoff. That's what the little X means. It means it's a local. Claire, help me here. It's not a franchise. It's just you get permission from them to host. You have to connect up with the main.
Yeah, we applied for a license. Official spot for TED.
And I know you said you work for the library. You're a development director at the library. This is your second opportunity to sort of help organize. What was your first year like? Can you remember? So far, so you're right on the brink of
last
the next
year. Oh my gosh!
Yeah.
Oh, so much has happened since then.
I mean, just TEDx, not the whole year.
Well, the library is really excited to be a partner in this. It's a really perfect fit for what we're trying to accomplish in the Library of the Future, of being a hub for community engagement and collaboration. So last year when I heard about TEDx, the library was very eager to jump on and get involved. Mm-hmm. And the thing I'm most impressed about is I do a lot of work with nonprofits, and I see how much time is spent in board meetings and budgets and applying for your nonprofit license, and I'm so impressed that this is all volunteer run. We have planning committee of about 10 to 12 people, and we get together every couple of weeks and each take on a little task and move it forward.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have some great sponsors who don't donate money. We don't have a way to accept money if you donate it. So they donate stuff. You know, ACS is donating the capability for streaming. It will be live streamed this year. The library donates the space.
If somebody wants to catch the live stream, how do they do it?
We have a Facebook page as our main means of communication, TEDx Anchorage on Facebook, and we'll be posting the link there for streaming.
Okay. I just want to break in here. We got an email from Daniel Constantine, is that how you say? A TEDx speaker. Hi, Daniel. This is his email reads: Daniel is state executive director of Alaska Farm Services Agency, the USDA. I'm excited about hearing from other speakers about their ideas about how we can build more sustainable communities in Alaska. Food is just one way to get people together and restore those fundamental connections that we're losing. Alaska has so many great people and so much potential. So it's kind of funny because you hear this rise of community and you also hear, you know, kind of the decline of community. I mean, people just generally talk about that. Like, you know, winter means everybody goes into their house and they don't know their neighbors, you know. I mean, it's just, I don't have the language for it, but something's going on here, you know. Some change, some progress, some innovation, I don't know. So, but anyway, go ahead.
Well, I really feel that Anchorage is on the verge of something really big here. I think our old guard is looking for the next gold rush or oil boom. And meanwhile, all of these people in our community are doing really small and creative and exciting things that is going to change our economy and our society and make Anchorage one of the best cities to live, by 2025?
Live, work, and play by 2025. Wow, this is great. You guys
drank the Kool-Aid.
I know.
No, but I mean, really, why do you think, let's talk just a little bit about that. And I don't mean to be critical of the old guard because they did a lot, but what convinces you of this?
You know, I started through AEDC, I started getting involved in the makerspace and the hackathon, and I went to a meeting of the makerspace, and everyone went around the room talking about these projects they're doing, and I had no idea any of this was happening. And then I keep meeting new people that are doing such exciting things. You know, Brandon's work, it's national, it's international, it's not just here. We're not just a bunch of podunks in Alaska trying to survive the cold winter. We're doing really incredible things here.
Yeah. Well, again, that makes us feel good, makes us feel vital, makes us feel not like the vestigial thumb somewhere that, you know, might drop off and no one would know once the oil money's
gone.
They
need us.
Yeah, they might need some of our solutions. I want to bring Indra back in, and you guys were having a little cross-pollination here, John. And what was your idea, Indra?
Well, I was, you know, just briefly chatting with John about the importance of, you know, his talk and, you know, the whole crowdfunding for artists, you know, because so often we're taught, you know, well, you have to have a grant, and to have a grant, you have to be established, and you have to, you know, do it a certain way, and you have to go through a certain belt, you know, just red tape and stuff. And this offers you an opportunity to really develop your own work you know, and be accountable to your viewers or the people who support you directly. And I think that that for artists is really good. It offers you a way to get the funding that you need for your project, but it also demands that you do it in a really clear and concise and focused way. And I think that's invaluable, you know, and it kind of goes back to an old model of, you know, as an artist surviving, and that is having patrons.
Yeah.
You know?
We've come full circle, right?
We've come full circle, right.
Yeah, interesting idea. And the other thing is the idea rises or falls on its own merits.
Right.
Exactly.
You don't get an imprimatur from some agency that says, yes, you are an artist.
Right.
We deem you an artist, and therefore here's $5,000. It's actually, you have to convince your audience by the way you move through the process by what you create. I mean, when I was raising with John the issue, well, that some of these legacy institutions were supposed to help with accountability and what happens with that. And I guess I think you see it in action. I mean, if people turn down or refuse to fund, or the second time around say, well, I did it last time, I don't think I'm going to do it again.
Right.
You're really out there in the marketplace in a way.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's risk-free feedback. I mean, it's fantastic, especially, I mean, art and as well as business. I mean, you get to hear exactly what's good about your project, what's not so good about your project, and is that a deal breaker when it comes to actually, you know, convincing people to invest in it. But what I loved about the idea of multiculturalism that you were talking about. I mean, my wife is Korean, so I'm kind of involved in the Korean culture here in Anchorage, and we have an extraordinarily diverse community. But what I think one of the powers of crowdfunding is the ability for those different cultures to invest in things specific to that culture, like Dia de los Muertos, and I apologize for the terrible accent
there,
or, you know, the Korean-Alaskan Friendship Festival, or things like that that can really raise the profile of these different demographics in our community, because it's such an amazing strength. I mean, there's, 90 different languages spoken in our public schools, and we have these really robust international community that is unique for a city of our size. I mean, it really is.
I agree. It's fascinating to me. I mean, the more you see it, the more you see it. I mean, it's everywhere.
Right.
You know, you could sort of miss it because a lot of it is in the labor force. You see people moving into labor, easy entry labor, and they're from very far away. They're from Somalia, Nepal, you know, Africa, all kinds of places. And you think, wow, they're in Anchorage, Alaska. That's just mind-blowing, you know. And that has got to be an infusion of energy and ideas and different ways of thinking about things that's going to change Anchorage. I mean, you say we're on the brink of change just because there's, you know, sort of cellular level, all this is sort of happening. But that's diversity in the community is probably a really big part of that. Have you seen, I wanted to sort of talk about the speakers you have and what kind of diversity you get in your speakers. So let's talk a little bit about that. There are 12 speakers. We've only touched on a very small handful. The topics are widespread. Let's talk a little bit about the process. We may have some listeners thinking, I'm going to do that next year. How do I do it?
Exactly.
So let's help them out with a little bit of that.
Yeah, so our planning committee dissolves at the end of TED, and then in the fall, one of us emails each other saying, do you think we should start planning again? And we form another committee, and so we're on Facebook, and then we also have an email, TEDxAnc@gmail.com. So if you're interested, become a friend on Facebook or join our email list, and we'll get the word out when things are happening. We form a committee, we brainstorm a topic, and then we try to get the word out as far and wide. So this radio show is really exciting for us to reach a new audience because these ideas get stale if it's just the same group of us talking every year. So the crazier the idea, it might not get picked, but we definitely want to hear what it is.
I would love to, I don't know, I don't mean to put you on the spot, but I don't want anybody to think their idea was too crazy to make it, but I'm interested in the breadth of ideas that come before you.
So we received probably double the amount of applications that we had spots for, and it was a tough process, a couple days locked in a room figuring it out. And I think what was the most determining factor is it's a broad theme, but not everyone stuck to the theme. A lot of people were just sending out their talk that they had done at whatever conference they were at last year. So we really respected the people that took some time to think about the theme and figure out how to take their idea and put it into that lens of what our theme is.
Mm-hmm. And so there's not there's nobody in charge in a way. In other words, there's not like sometimes when you have to apply for a grant, you have to. There's people in charge. Here, a new committee comes together every year. If somebody wants to get involved at that level, it's open to them to get involved at that level. And then I'm curious from our two speakers, the application process. Help me out with it. Was it arduous? Was it, you know, what would you say? Do you answer 5 questions? I mean, what does the application process look like?
Well, I felt that the application process was actually pretty straightforward. You know, they told you this is the theme, this is what we're looking for, these are, you know, the standards, these are the things to do, to not do. That was very helpful. And then I think the hardest part about the process is really thinking through your idea and making sure that you're being articulate about it in a way that, you know, is accessible to the committee who's selecting. And
mm-hmm.
you know, so
I want to ask one question and then I want to hear what you say, John. I wondered, is it up or down, or do you give feedback to applicants? Like, do you say, if you tweak this a little bit, we might consider it, or is it just an up and down, you know, thumbs up, thumbs down?
Our vote had a lot of ranking and prioritizing, and so all the talks were so interesting. It really was hard to decide. And then the feedback, we have a chair of the speakers who kind of organizes that
part. Right.
And she got back to people and interviewed some people to give them feedback and hopefully mm-hmm. gave everyone feedback, because they're all great ideas and could easily be come back again next year.
Right. This is only an annual event. We're not trying to do one every 6 months or anything like that. Okay.
Yep, once a year.
All right. John, what was the application process like for you?
I agree. It was very straightforward. It forced me to really sort of outline my idea in a bulleted form or a short form. And sort of, I like the part where they ask you sort of what kind of presentations have you given in the past to sort of gauge, you know, where you are in your public presentation skills. So it was it was great. It was a really easy process.
You know, I thought to myself, you hear the classic phrase, you know, public speaking is the thing that terrorizes people more than anything. And here, they absolutely, they're up on the stage right at the Wilder Marston. Do they have those cute little microphone things? Or?
Oh, anyone's been in the Marston Theater, you know, we're not super high tech.
So. No, it's just going to be fairly basic. Right, right. I'm thinking of the TED Talks, where it's very cool, you know, and everybody wears black, you know, sweatshirts or something. I don't know.
We're pretty cool, but not that cool.
not that cool. So, yeah, and I'm just, if it's possible to just let the audience know a little bit more of the range of topics they might hear on March 30th when this actual event happens.
Yeah. Well, we must have been hungry when we were picking the speakers, because there's a lot on food. Culture is the food for the heart. Connecting the dots across Alaska's food system. And then we have some fun, there are some fun ones. Lauren Hayano is one of our youth speakers, a recent high school graduate, and hers is The Point to Being Pointless.
Oh, I saw that. Tell me a little bit about that. What do you know about that? Is it about...
Well, it's an example of how she was on a team and they had a real project they needed to do, and instead of just getting down and doing the project, they spent a day doing some fun activities, getting to know each other, where they didn't work at all. And then the next day when they got together to work on the project, the collaboration came much easier.
I like that. Yeah. I like that a lot. So let's see. Any others that you want to give us an example of?
Let's see. Get uncomfortable living in the yellow. A lot of these ones, I don't know what they mean. We'll find out on Saturday. The divine connection of the human condition.
Wow.
Yeah. Great.
Wow.
Great titles.
Really, really interesting. And John, is this your first one?
This is my, I've watched the other ones on the TED website, and they're fantastic. And once I started hearing who else was going to be there, I got a little spooked, but this is going to be great.
Well, we're out of time. So I just want to thank everybody for just a terrific show. Thank you to our listeners in the studio. I want to thank Claire Ross, John Bittner, Indra Arriaga, and thanks to Nick Mink, who called us from Indiana, and Brendan Babb. One last reminder, the TEDx Anchorage is Saturday, March 30th, 1 to 7 in the Wilder Marston at LUSAC Library. I'll be back as your host next week with members of the Raven's Roost co-housing movement. Hometown Alaska is on the web at alaskapublic.org. You can join us on Facebook at Alaska Public. Pat Yak is Vice President of Public Media. Kristen Spack is our web editor and audio engineer. Thanks so much for joining us today on Hometown Alaska. I'm Kathleen McCoy.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect KSKA and Barnett from Eagle River. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies can be purchased by calling 550-8400. This is KSKA Anchorage.